And now an article called from John Murphy called About the Village, Life Goes On. And as you will have come to expect from John Murphy, it begins and ends with some poetry. And this is from William Wordsworth, The Prelude. Enough that I am free for months to come, may dedicate myself to chosen tasks, may quit the tiresome sea and dwell on shore, if not a settler on the soil, at least to drink wild water and to pluck green herbs and gather fruits fresh from their native bough. Hidden behind the curtain of these strange times, there's an unseen portrait with the likeness of a new world fashioned from the familiar elements of our lost old one. Perhaps by the end of this summer it will be unveiled like a painting in the summer exhibition, and we will see and better understand. For now it is all shrouded in mystery. This is a summer unlike any we will have known in recent times. There will be no holidays abroad in the sunny Mediterranean. Even a day with buckets and spades on the shingly beaches has become a luxury. The season of playful delights, test cricket and tea, strawberries and tennis at Wimbledon, hats and high fashion with racing at Ascot, blazers and pims and rowing at Henley, of summer festivals at Reading and Glastonbury, sometimes gloriously warm, oftentimes muddily wet, and the opera and classical music festivals at Alborough, Garsington and Glyndebourne and Buxton. All have lost their place and their audience. There is football without supporters to watch on TV, but without its noisome supporters that feels a little like Morecambe without Wise or Brighton without Rock. The BBC has promised us Henry Wood's proms, but they will play out without an audience to cheer and clap and raucously sing Jerusalem. This summer, this England is like Sleeping Beauty's palace, drowsily waking from a century of dreams. There is a paradox to this, for the virus that has kept us housebound yet has put wings to our feet. Walking is the new flying, and fleet of foot we've been carried farther and farther afield from the village on our daily walks with our two dogs. We have walked beyond Beaconsfield to the Oxford Way, taken it across open fields, waist high in whirly barley, to the outskirts of Chislehampton, and then by byways and open country to Drayton St Leonard. Other days it has been to Cholsey and the Astons, or to Molesford and out to the woods with their hides, or to Blueberry and via fields to the disused railway line that once ran from Didcot to Newbury and on to Southampton. Its red brick bridges are islands left at sea in a lake of wild grasses and shrubs, not least glorious elder in full fragrance of fuller flower. And above and beyond on either side of the river runs the higher ridgeway, either clipping the rolling chalk downs of Berkshire or crossing the highs and lows of the valleys of the Chilterns. Beside Blueberry there are gallops that run parallel into distant horizons or join the Fairmile further along the ridge. This is horse country. The river banks have been a bit busier than usual, so we have generally kept instead to wide countryside. It is true there have been no pubs at which to stop, but there have been views, and on clear days the views over the Thames Valley and from the Berkshire Downs are as breathtaking as anywhere in this world. After the sun-drenched spring, June has come a bit like a damp squib to a bonfire party, but that has not dampened the pleasure of the fields. The winds have picked up and there has been rain again, but not enough to satisfy the parched earth. Small changes to familiar walks stand out. The allotments at Warborough are gated now, perhaps to keep the lowly tread of the common man from its superior ground. The topiary yews of Ewelm are still smartly a cut above the rest. The wilderness walk that winds by and beyond our allotments here in Benson, almost a secret garden that had been slashed to the ground, is now its own luxuriant jungle once again. And all of this to the tumult of birdsong. Out in the fields, careful crow purposely keep its beady eyes on unguarded eggs. The kites soar to oversee another's dead misfortune that may feed one of their own. Pearl grey feathers by footpaths are a sure sign of sparrowhawks catching plump pigeons on the wing. And there is a frenzied air to the birdsong itself, The Czechs have not learnt their proper part in this symphony, and their jarring notes call always for more food than their weary parents can find to feed them. Life, in its fullness and its abundance, so easily overlooked, is all out there in the long grasses, amidst the cow parsley, in the fields of beans, or in the fields of green wheat, touched by the Midas sun, and turning into gold before our very eyes. It is my fifth summer here in Benson, and like any fifth former in my school days, I look to the form of the sixth with curiosity mixed with trepidation. Despite all we can will the world to do, it seems our lives and our world has been remade by one of life's least detectable elements, a simple virus. How are the mighty fallen? Yet in what form may the eye catch sight of, and what may make the heart glad? There is a real world all about us waiting to be discovered, from the gardens, from the fields, and from walks. And on those longer adventures from the village, we can gasp astonished at the views from the tops of the wondrous hills. Finally, to all those in the village who have kept our shops open and well stocked, those who have delivered food to those who cannot get out, and to those who simply have been neighbourly in this difficult time, there is a vote of thanks. I will let Wordsworth have the last word on this. I have owed to them, such perhaps as have no slight or trivial influence, on that best portion of a good man's life, his little, nameless, unremembered acts of kindness and of love.